damage would be doing such things.
Well, I heard a joke, and I don't know how true this is, but it say that some years ago that several blacks went to see the senator and said, you know, that you have not done anything for black people and that we want you to do XYZ project for us. And the senator said, yes, you know, I don't mind doing project for you. So as soon as you are able to muscle up enough votes to help keep me in office, then I'll be responsive to your needs. But I'm responsive to the needs of the people who put me in office. I've heard that statement made by many people who knew who knows the senator, and I believe there's a bit of truth in it because the senator is a very astute politician, and I think he recognizes the vote, and I think this is what has brought him around to wanting to do more for black people. I also like to say this too. I think that a man reaches a certain point in life where he broadens his attitude and concern for people. I think that it goes. I think it seems to me that when you're in politics, you go in as a concerned citizen for the people who put you in there, and somewhere along the way you get divorced from people and you become an institutional representative, and as you reach your peak and mellow a little bit, you go back to the people, and you have no more need to be concerned with a livelihood and all these kinds of things, so you become more dedicated to people following. And I'd like to think that this is where the senator is now. He's back to the people and their problems, more so than to...
Has his voting record changed?
Well, in some areas, yes. I think his voter record has changed. As a matter of fact, I just got some information across my desk this morning, and we sent a flood of letters to Robert Stevenson about the OEO extension legislation, and he indicates in this memorandum here that he's in full support of it and is going to do all he can for it. This is the kind of thing that we're doing throughout the country now. It's a kind of thing of using the power, the local power, to hopefully to convince our national leaders as well as our local leaders that we want certain things done.
Congressman Stevens, do you think he would have been supporting OEO legislation in the beginning?
The word that we received, and I can't tell how accurate this is, but the word that we received is that, number one, that he was a key person on the subcommittee to determine whether this would happen or not, and that they didn't know whether he was going to support it or not, and there was word that maybe he might not support it. And we were advised to, and I might say that Congressman Stevens and I are very good political friends, and we've come even better. So what we did is ask elected officials in the 10th Congressional District, Black, to write him and to have other organizations to write him and let him know our personal feelings about it. And I was happy to receive this memorandum on Friday indicating what you just read, that he will support it. I'm not saying that we changed the senator's mind either, but I'm saying that we did write letters and we have gotten a response that's in favor of it. I think that blacks are beginning to learn a little bit better the political process and how you get things done, and we're using those tools and techniques that's been used by other people for years.
How much of a problem is the one you mentioned of many blacks not seeing direct results of political activity, and therefore they registered or may have voted once and now don't see any need to take the problem?
I think that this kind of apathy, if I may address myself to it first, is existing with all people, not just black people. I think it's existing with all people, and people are, if I may use the word, just thirsty for freshness in politics and for a man that they feel that really is concerned about their affairs and their problems, and they feel that most elected officials have divorced themselves from people and their problems, and they're only out there trying to hog up what they can get themselves, and that they get in office not being concerned about people. And I think this has been one of my assets, is that I've, on a daily basis, tried to show my concern through action for people, and they're looking for this kind of thing. Going back to your original question about blacks, I think that for lack of knowledge of politics and how it worked, when the opportunity availed itself for black people to run for office, and for the new privilege of registering, black people went to the registration's office in masses to register, because I think they had one thing in mind, is that if I register and if I can get some black people in office, then we're going to get all the things that we haven't gotten in 300 years. And what they, I think, has been disgruntled to them is that one person on a board of 16 can't bring them everything that they haven't had in 300 years. And for this reason, they've developed this apathy of, well, we don't care, you know, it's not going to do any good. And I'm hoping, as I preach all the time to black elected officials, that we must, not only for the sake of black people, but for the sake of all people, must have this revival to the point that we bring back strong belief in elected officials and that they are concerned. And if they're not concerned, put them out of office and try to put somebody in there who does exemplify that concern that we need for our people. And when I say our people, I mean all people, because I get calls occasionally, well, every week from people say, well, I was told to call you because if I call you, you'd get something done. And whereas if I call somebody else, nothing would happen. And I returned 95% of every call I receive. I don't care where it comes from. I return it, and if I can do anything, I immediately get on it and have my people address themselves to that problem. And I do this because that's what I was elected to do, to serve the people, and I'm concerned about that. And I really want to do a good job.
How important, in your judgment, is the Voting Rights Act been?
I think that it's been very important. I think that it opened up a new hope for black people throughout this country. In spite of the apathy now, I think that as a result of it, every year we're still getting more and more black representation that never would have happened, never would have occurred, in my opinion, unless we've had that Voting Rights Act in 1965 with Nellis.
And you said that was immediately followed by just masses of people going and registering for the first time.
Right.
But in the last couple of years, southwide, there's been my point is there's still thousands and thousands of people who are not registered.
Right.
And there's been no great effort at voter registration. Do you see any change in that?
Well, I think that we recognize this problem, and we've decided now that we're going to have massive voter registration drives throughout the state of Georgia. We're going to try doing this with local people who will exemplify themselves as leaders in the community in hopes that they can rally around and get people concerned. We're going to try to point out to people the results of what some people have been able to accomplish for blacks and for whites alike because they've been elected officials, because they've been in the political arena. And we hope that by doing this and by showing results that we will come back and get people elected. Now, I think that all of this has not died, but as it is true with anybody, it takes a stimulus or something to motivate people to get out and do what they haven't done. I think that Maynard Jackson was the stimulus in Atlanta that got 49% of the black people 49% of the votes in Atlanta to be black. I think this never would have happened if somebody had just gone in there and said, we're going to try to have a voter registration drive. But the fact that Maynard Jackson is running for mayor and he's a black man, that hope came up again, that if we get this man in, maybe we'll get better for our people because he's a black man. Not only is he a black man, but we've been impressed with Maynard Jackson as vice mayor. We know that he's qualified. He's not just another black man, but he's qualified. We feel he will do a good job. I don't think that black people are no longer concerned with just putting a black in office. I think they want to put a man in there that they have belief and confidence in and feel that he will do a good job and that he's not going in office to do the same thing that many other elected officials have done, and that is to try to fatten their own pockets and this type of thing. And I think they believed in Maynard Jackson. It could have been another black man who had announced for that same position, and he wouldn't have gotten the same results from black people as Maynard Jackson did in Atlanta. I firmly believe that. I think it happens and will happen in other communities throughout there.
What do you think is the significance of Maynard Jackson's election, Atlanta being the largest city in the Deep South?
I think that the results in history will record this as being that Maynard Jackson is going down in history as one of the greatest mayors Atlanta have ever had. He's going down in history as a man like I try to be, as not a black mayor, but a mayor that happened to have been black, that have done a heck of a good job of reorganizing the government, making the government more responsive to the people, and doing just an all-around good job with a lot of support from a lot of people in that community. And that's the way I feel about it, and I think that's going to be the results. And I think that one thing, too, is going to help in terms of white people's apathy or fears of voting for a black man, because Maynard is going to be a mayor for the people of Atlanta.
How do you perceive and how do you find blacks in general view Lester Maddox?
I think that Lester Maddox has been viewed by many blacks as a man that you could tell what he's thinking and what he believed in, as opposed to a white man dressed up in a white suit wearing a blue suit. But I think that Mr. Maddox made a gross error, and I think that he lost a tremendous amount of black support in the state of Georgia by the recent statement he made concerning the late Dr. Martin Luther King portrait in the Capitol. I think that that did him a tremendous amount of damage.
What was his remark on that, I recall?
I can't quote it directly, but it was something in the gist of this, that Martin Luther King was a communist and caused more bloodshed than maybe any other single man in the state of Georgia, something along these lines, and that his portrait should not be in the Capitol. And black people throughout this country, not only the state of Georgia, have deep feelings for what Dr. King stood for. And I'm sure that they resent very grossly the fact that anybody would say that he was a communist and that he caused bloodshed, when his method and his procedure, based on everything he did, was nonviolent. And I think that this did a tremendous amount of damage for Lieutenant Governor Maddox and the state of Georgia, so much so that he lost support for his candidacy.
Before he made that comment at that time, you believed then that he may have gotten some substantial black support?
Yes, I really do. I think because doing Lester Maddox's term in office as governor before, and I don't know if he was directly responsible for it or not, but he gets credit for it. More blacks would hide in state government and key positions, and black people are interested in employment because it enhances their ability to live a better life. This is a key thing in black people's lives, is being able to get a good job and have an equal opportunity. Well, this had been spread and publicized throughout the community that Lester Maddox, although he might be this and he might be that, at least he gave black people jobs in the state, and this had not been done by previous governors. This was an asset. This was something in his favor. But to come out and make the statement that he did a few weeks ago, I think it's damaged him tremendously. I don't think that he can overcome it by election time.
Had he not said that, you know, just
I think he would have gotten
to what percentage of black folk ballpark figure.
I can't, but maybe let's say that
10%, 40%, 80%. I'm just trying to get some.
I think he probably would have gotten maybe between 25% and 35% of those voting if he had not done that. And I understand he's made another speech that called the integration speech that I haven't heard, but I got that report last week. I think that he lost that because in talking to people throughout the state, they were saying, well, heck, I'd rather deal with Lester than to deal with some other people that I don't know about. You know, as I said before, it's, you know, a person dressed in one color suit and really wearing another, and astute, polished, can hide their own feelings and maneuver so that you don't know what's going on, really.
How do you assist Jimmy Carter as governor?
It's been my... in my view, and I hope that this will never happen again. I wish that the law would pass that it couldn't happen again, and that is where the governor can run, the present governor going out of office can run for lieutenant governor. I think because of this, in fact, that the lieutenant governor let it be known almost from the beginning that he planned to run for governor again. So my attitude is that all the strong ties that he had with department heads, with other people in government that was left there, had a certain amount of fear, respect, consigned, whatever you want to call it, for the lieutenant governor, so much so that they've never relinquished their relationship with the lieutenant governor, nor their loyalty in some instances. And I think this has affected the present governor's administration, the fact that the lieutenant governor still had these loyalties and strong ties with many people in the administration. I think that Jimmy Carter is a well-qualified man that could have been even a greater governor for Georgia if he didn't have to deal with what I've just said, on the other hand. In spite of that, I think that he's been very progressive. He brought some good things to Georgia, and I don't know if they're going to last when he reorganized the government and did away with a lot of fat in the government. And I think all that was good. I'm in full support of his human resource program. I think that's another good program. I think that he brought a tremendous amount of progressiveness to the states in terms of its administrative ability. And I think he could have done an even a greater job if it hadn't been for the fact that our present lieutenant governor was just governor just before he took over office. I think this really did a tremendous amount of damage.
Do you think blacks are likely to end up unifying before any single, behind any single candidate for governor this year?
I hope not. I'm not. I think that one of the mistakes that we've made in the past is that because of our lack of political astuteness, is that we put all of our eggs in one bag, and if we lost in that bag, we'd lost out. And politics is the name of the game is that you support the people and help the people who support you. And it's my hope that we will not do that, that we will not support one candidate. I'm sure that Lester Maddox still is going to get some black support. I'm not doubting that at all. He's going to get some black support. I think that all the candidates are going to get some black support. I'll say this, though, when it comes down to the last mile and it comes down to the election itself, whatever candidate's running on the Democratic ticket, in all probabilities, unless it's Lester Maddox, will probably get 80% of the black votes. Lester Maddox, I don't know how much of that support he would get, but he still would get some.
Anything we didn't cover that you wanted to comment on?
I think that one of the things that I want to say, and I think that many white people have been surprised by this, is that there's a tremendous amount of talent in the black community that white people never dreamed was there. And I think they've been impressed by a great deal of the black elected officials and been impressed with the job that they're doing. And I think this in itself is going to, and has and will even in the future, help race relations do away with a lot of the fears that white people have had. It will kind of bring about a better atmosphere to work in, black and white people throughout the state and the South, I think. People had fears of blacks doing one thing and doing another. They had fears of them not being qualified or that they wouldn't try to represent all people and this type of thing. And I think that this has been one of the things that that I hear all the time as an elected official that's been a strong point in my term of office, and I think it's been strong in many others, is that we do. One of the things is that I don't think that most blacks have that deep-seated traditional attitude about races. I don't think that you might find some of the younger blacks who have a tremendous amount of hate, but I think that the average black person does not have that deep-seated traditional customary dislike for blacks or dislike for whites as you find in many whites, and this has come about over years of experience and traditions and a whole lot of other things. For instance, in my life, I've never had anybody to teach me or to say to me that I should dislike you because you're white or because you are less than I am or because you're inferior to me. I've always been taught in a religious home that all of us are God's children, and that's the way I see it. And that if someone does wrong to me, then it should be my responsibility to try to not get them to do that again by letting them see that all of us are God's children. and that we should live here on this earth together and be concerned about the affairs of each other. And this has been my basic philosophy, and it helped. I don't believe in violence. I believe in nonviolence. That has helped. I believe in a conference table. I believe in performance and hard work, and all that's helped.
What was the effect in Augusta of the disturbances here when six people were shot and killed? What was the effect of that?
Well, the immediate effect was very bad. But I think that I can sum it up by saying that my election, and I use as a slogan, "Together We Build," throughout our election. And I think that my election is indicative of the fact of what the community really felt afterwards. And I think the reason for this is that because the black leadership as well as the white leadership came together, recognized that this is our home, and we got problems of this bad, we need to try to do something about it. As a result of this, we got a Human Relations Commission that's doing a very fine job. We had some other reports done by the Urban League that was very revealing to the community, both black and whites, and we got together and tried to resolve many of the problems. I think that there were renewed racial feelings in the white community that probably had subsided to some degree as a result of many other things that had happened that were brought back to the surface, hopefully just momentarily. I hope that they've gone back down now, but I think that this did happen, and you could see it and feel it, you know, as I went around in the community. And I think that but I'd like to think that now that as a result of many of the things that have happened in the past few years, that that we're now concerned with our community, and that we've gone to reset our bitter attitudes about races as a result of the riot, if you want to call it that, that was here a few years ago.
Do you find there's anything that black candidates have that particularly almost make them more attractive to whites than white candidates?
No, I think that I don't think it's more attractive than white candidates. I think that most of your well-qualified whites are not interested in running for public office. So I think in many instances we've come up with a mediocre white who runs for public office. And in the black community, 9 times out of 10, you've got a top-flighted man, well-educated, well-polished, and he's almost got to be a giant to be elected. I think this has been one of the things that has been happening. I talk right here in this community. It's pretty difficult to get a top-flighted businessman. He's not interested. He's not interested in what it would do for his family and others. I think that's one of the things, and I don't think it makes him more attractive, but I think that when people...
Howard Lee told us something to the effect that he found that some whites reacted positively to black candidates on the grounds that they were people who many whites felt would have a greater sense of compassion for having suffered more.
Well, I think that, you know, you might be given voters credit for a great deal more intelligence than they have. I don't think that anybody sociologically or psychologically, the average voter, looks at anything like that. I think that, you know, you'd find your more intelligent, your more well-read or educated black whites might look along those lines and say that, you know, that because we've been depressed and this type of thing, that we'd have more concern about people and their problems. I think this is true to a large degree, but I think that many whites possess the same thing, because there's certainly more poor white folks than there are rich white folks, so, you know, we have the same problem there. But I do feel that, as I said, we have to come up with a top-flighted candidate that's probably overqualified for what he's running for, as opposed to, well, for an example here, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, we had a fifth-grade barbecue-cooking white man to run against a Payne College professor who was a candidate for a doctorate degree from the University of Indiana, Oklahoma, one of them. That white barbecue man won. over this place and who was a candidate for a doctorate degree for the Board of Education. And I think that at that point in history that race was more important than qualification. There was this fear, this dislike for black folks that brought this about. That same person now serves on the Board of Education. The same person, you know, 10 years later, now serves on the Board of Education, because I think the voters are more intelligent, but not intelligent enough to analyze the psychological effects on this type of thing, but I think they are more intelligent. They're intelligent enough to feel that I'd rather take my chances with this black qualified person than to take my chances with a fifth grade barbecue man. And I think this is the kind of thing that has helped. I don't feel that most whites would analyze it to the degree that they would feel that it was a psychological thing or that it was because of a sociological circumstance. I don't believe that. Could be. Mr. Lee is much more astute in politics than I am.
Well, I've probably given you a very rough translation also of what he said. Right. Yeah. Is there anything else?
I see great hope for the South. I do feel that the South is the promised land for black people. I feel this way because, as I've said on many other occasions, one of the things that I've always been impressed by the Southern white man, and I've lived both in the North and the South, and I am a Southerner, is that I see different from maybe a white Northerner or from some other part of the country. And I think this is an asset in the South, is that the white man, although he would not let you live in the hotel, eat in the restaurant, or many other the customs and traditions and the laws that existed in the South, the Jim Crow laws and all that thing, if a black man came to his door and was hungry, he would feed him. You know, although he felt that he was not his equal, which says to me that he has feelings, a responsibility, or a concern for the hunger of a black man, although he didn't want him in the restaurant and the motel and this type of thing. Now, the difference between that and the Northern white man is that the Northern white man doesn't have that kind of concern. He would not have fed that black man if he had come to that back door or front door, whatever it is. And I think that that in itself is a kind of thing that once we convince white people that we are not inferior intelligently, that we can think, and I think we're doing this every day through many other areas and through the publications that are printed, with that kind of feeling about us that we would be better off in the South eventually, because I don't think that we would engender additional hate because we exemplified the kind of intelligence or the same intelligence that a white man has with that kind of feeling that he has for blacks in the South. And I found this true in the South all over. White people have always been willing to help a poor black man with some clothes or something like this. Now, it might have been that he could have done it the other way around by, instead of giving him 40 cents an hour at his plant, if he had given him 80 cents an hour, he wouldn't have had to do that. And I don't know if that was a strategy of his or not, but I do know that it existed. And I think that that in itself might be one of the reasons why I feel that blacks are better off in the South, and that eventually, with the right type qualification, with the right type skills, where they can have tremendous input, and with more opportunity as we're getting every day, that to me the South is the promised land.
How do you respond to the angry young black who sort of came along, black teenagers who came along after the Civil Rights Movement was passed, and you know they see things are bad and they're very angry?
Right, they're very angry, and I've talked to many of them, and maybe rightfully so. And most of the angry blacks are the blacks who are in school and still reading the books and still getting the education, once they get out in life and start dealing with reality, many of them change, and they recognize that that all of us are in the jungle together, and that we must try to survive, and the best way to survive is to use your talents and skills within the system, because that's where the money is, to make a livelihood for your parents and for your children and for what have you. I think that there's a maturity that they reach somewhere along the way once they get out of school, that say to them that what I did and what I learned in school and my attitude in school was not the right attitude that I have in order to make the necessary changes that we need to be working on in our communities for the betterment of our community, and that I cannot make changes with that kind of attitude.
End interview, Edward McIntyre. No more transcription.
Eight, and start working on the problems. And I think that's where most young blacks finally reach. They reach a point where they say, well, hate alone is not going to solve these problems, but I must, some kind of way, if I have some symbol that's offensive, as I said to a young fellow who came into my office and who had a degree in a criminal justice and wanted to get a job downtown working for a judge, and there was a vacancy that I thought he could get. The judge is 67 years old. I said, now let me tell you one thing.